Yay!
Balance out the right side.
Welcome.
Norm.
Norm, that's great.
All right, welcome to the Tuesday, April 3rd, 2012 Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting. The first item on our agenda is requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. Is there anybody who came here to address the board on an issue that is not already on our printed agenda? It's a miracle. All right. We have is John Ross here? John, if you would come up and stand in front of the town clerk, Kathy Wilson, here.
Our new art member.
Yes, John Ross is joining the Arts Committee. If you'll stand right in front of her, she's going to read you your charge. And you must give a good one.
You don't have to. No swearing. As an Arts Committee member, I will, 1, recommend to the Board of Aldermen a policy for the selection of art to be displayed in or on public facilities, 2, coordinate arrangements to have artwork displayed on town property in conjunction with the staff of the Recreation and Parks Department, 3, work collaboratively with the community on projects related to the arts. Members of the Arts Committee may assist in the community fundraising activities, but any funds received by the committee or by members acting in their official capacity must be accounted for, and all expenditures by the committee must be made in accordance with the provisions of the Local Government Budget and Fiscal Control Act. Such funds may be received and expended by the town only for purposes for which the town is statutorily authorized to expend public funds. And 4, report to the board as requested and perform such additional duties as the board may request from time to time.
Good to see you. Good to
meet you. Looking forward to working with you. Right. Thank you.
Yeah, all right. There we go.
All right. All right. We don't have any resolutions. The consent agenda. Mr. Manager.
There are 3 items on the consent agenda, the first one being the approval of the minutes from March 20th and March 27th. Second item is a modern modification of the Carborough High School conditional use permit located at 201 Rockhaven Road for the physical education building. And the third item is an ordinance amending the membership of the Arts Committee.
I'd like to pull the first item of March 20th minutes.
Okay. Is there a motion for the other items?
Move 2 and 3.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously. On the minutes, what were you going to say?
Yeah, on March 20th, the March 20th minutes, on the Greenway Commission, the ordinance becoming effective upon adoption. Well, the problem with that is, and we kind of missed it, I missed it for sure, that on February 21st, we had appointed TAB member Linda Hawk and said that her term would go to January 2013. And so, you know, I think we need to make everything consistent.
We need to correct that.
So how do we fix it?
You just have to bring it back. You want to add it, 1 person, 2 persons? I mean, we've got to bring back an amendment because it was effective on that day, and as of that day, there's now a set number of members, and to add to the committee, you just need
right,
to...
Right, and I think what I guess we would need to do is have...
Who are the liaisons? Who are the liaisons that we accidentally booted?
It's not a question of who we booted. It's the question of when they're... that they would even have a term. Linda would not have a term were we to do this effective immediately. And for everyone else, they would...
So she's the only one that's affected that way.
Correct.
Okay.
And everyone else...
just the one seat needs to correct.
So we need to add a seat for a temper for some specific...
No, we need to make sure that...
No, February 21st, we had appointed her until January 2013. And she's the only one, I believe, that's affected.
Okay, go ahead, Kathy. Actually, the ordinance that was passed on the 20th removed the representative seats from the Planning Board, Recreation and Parks Commission, Environmental Advisory Board, Transportation Advisory Board.
Right, so they're all going to be up.
So what would need to happen, correct me if I'm wrong, with the amendment is those seats would need to be...
If we're going to add seats or persons to this committee...
Add it back until January.
Add it back.
Until January. Right.
Okay. All the ones that we removed?
They weren't meant to be removed immediately.
Right.
What we meant was that they would be removed in January of 13. And somehow things got mixed up at our last meeting so that it was effective immediately.
Yes.
Instead of effective January 13.
Okay. So basically we just got to add the seats back until January what?
2013.
Until January of 2013. All right. Okay. So we'll just have to bring back an amendment and
then
add them.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
All right. Kathy, you know, then you know what to do from here with notification.
Yes.
Great.
When is the
there's a May meeting.
There's a May meeting. So we would hope to get that done before May, so we can be clear about that.
Yeah, we can get it done next week. Yeah. Simple enough.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Is there a motion for the minutes?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. That brings us to item D1, other matters, report from Orange County staff regarding upcoming revaluation process.
Mr. Jakes Creighton from the Orange County Tax Administrator is here this evening to talk about a potential revaluation process for the Orange County.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. I am Jinx Creighton, and I am your friendly neighborhood tax collector. But actually, this evening, I'm here in my capacity as tax assessor. We got some interesting information a few weeks ago, and I made a hotline to the county manager, and we sat down with the finance director, because conditions were changing in Orange County and in Carver just the same. Basically, our numbers had been telling us for a number of years that values in Orange County had been rising gently. Well, that changed in 2011. They turned around, and they turned around rather dramatically. And so this presentation is an explanation of some things that have been going on the last several years. Hopefully you will enjoy that, and then a look at the future, what 2013 could bring to us. So let's start with the good news. The local economy continues to grow. Business property value is up. Motor vehicle value is up. New construction continues in Orange County, not quite at the pace that we were seeing the last couple of years. So at the same tax rate, that puts a little more money into the public purse. So let's take a moment now and look at what the reval cycle looks like. Now, basically what we do is we start off with a base. In 2005, we had a revaluation, and you've got smooth growth in the tax base because we don't recognize increases in value due to market conditions or decreases in value due to market conditions between revals. Then, of course, we have this big thing going on there, in the midst of one of the biggest housing crises since the Great Depression. And then we have this very steady growth that looks pretty good from continued new construction. Yes, sir.
That big jump is a consequence of that's when the revaluation happened?
That's right. And that's a good question because, you see, what that jump does is it does not recognize what happened between 2008 and 2009. It recognizes what happened between 2005 and 2009. Now, of course, this is what people saw, and no one believed it. Let's zoom in a minute. That's a big leap. You know, we've gone countywide from $11 billion to $14 billion, and know, this is while the headlines are screaming, values are crashing in Atlanta and Jacksonville and Miami, all the big cities. But none of these big media outlets publishes statistics on carbon. None of these big media outlets publish, you know, the Case-Shiller Index does not track anywhere around here. So let's see what really happened. And that's what really happened. People were right. Values went down between 2008 and 2009, but not by a huge amount, but they did. All these numbers have been adjusted for market value. Now, there is something creeping on the right-hand side of the slide, and this is what happened in 2012. Remember I said prices took a pretty significant change in the other direction, and so where between 2009, growth to 10, a little bit of growth to 11, and then, wow. So values are going down. We've looked at some statistics from the first 2 months of this year, and the trend is continuing. So basically, as we get ready or as we are performing the revaluation, we are sort of riding, think about a playground sliding board. We're riding the sliding board down. Now, in doing a revaluation, we need sales. So let's look at the sales that are going on in the county. This is the peak over the last several years. 2004 showed 2,500 sales or more, and then that volume has been falling. You can see that between 2007 and 2008, the market is already slowing down. The banks are withdrawing capital. And in 2011, we now have 969 sales countywide. Sales are the lifeblood of a revaluation. We can't tell what the market is saying if it's being quiet. Now, you might think, well, don't we have 3 years of sales to look at, 2009, 2010, 2011? Not really, because in 2009, 2010, the message the sales were giving us was that values were rising. That's not what is happening now. They're going the other way. So the only sales we have to work with right now are the 2011 sales and what we will pick up during this year. And frankly, there are just no sales at all in many neighborhoods. So what can we say is going on in the neighborhood? It makes it very difficult. So here's a map of the qualified sales. A qualified sale is a transaction that is not a foreclosure. It's not a short sale. This is what we saw in 2011. You can see the distribution down, you know, in this lovely box, which is the Carver-Chapel Hill School District. That's where most of the action is. If you look at rural Orange County, we've got about 340 square miles. We've got about 300 sales. So once again, we have a lack of data. Now, to put this in context, let's look at where we were the same time in the cycle last time. There you go. Lots more red splotches. And that's what we're having now. 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, rather, and now. So this is what it looks like side by side. And, you know, this is a challenge. I think this number of sales in Little River is about 36. You know, we have entire grid squares that have no sales at all. We have parcels that have no sales within 5 miles. So it's going to be a challenge, and it's the sort of thing that if we have to do, we certainly will do, and we're doing it right now. We're working on it. Now, naturally, I would expect you all to have a focus on something a little closer to home, Carver. So these are the sales we have for you in 2011. And again, in context, twice as many 5 years ago. And these larger splotches like this, they're usually multifamily, and so the whole parcel lights up when we get one sale in there. So imagine a large condominium development or townhouses or something like that, and we've got one sale in it. Well, what does that tell you? Tell us about value. So again, in context, there's where we were 5 years ago, and twice as many and half as many. You know, our goal in a revaluation is to restore equity. That's why we do them. You know, what typically happens in the market is values go up and down at different rates for different kinds of property. So we have revaluations to tax everyone on the same basis. You know, that's the most important thing we do. So, again, side by side, the 2 years. Now, I don't know if you noticed from 2009, but the public really loves a revaluation. I mean, don't they jump up and down and say how happy they are? So I brought you a little cartoon. Whoops, wrong button. There we go. This is Brunhilde. I love this. Trick or treat, fill my bag or I'll do something awful. No, go away, or I'll come to your house and do something even worse. Well, how can you? I'm a witch, and I am the tax assessor.
How many people cut that out and gave it to you when they saw it? I bet it wasn't just one, right? I bet when that got...
Yes, you are correct. I think I got three several years ago, and I kept it for just moments like these. You know, what's more lovable, an assessor or a collector? The collector has no heart, and the assessor has no brain, right?
Well, thank goodness somebody's willing to do it, and thank you.
Well, the heartless and brainlessness of my soul, thank you as well. Very kind.
We've been called worse. Yeah.
Living in the public eye is not always the most fun. But actually, I do enjoy this work because I enjoy people. And most of the time, at the end of the conversation, we've made friends, mm-hmm. and I enjoy that. And I'm sure you have the same. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's look at a standard for revaluations. Now, in North Carolina law, if your valuations exceed 15% of market value, if you go above this gold line, then you should have a revaluation. If your market values if your appraised values fall below 85% of market, you should have a revaluation. So, as you see, in 2007, we fell below the standard, and that meant we had to have a revaluation by 2010. Not 2009 as planned, but we could have waited until 2010, and there was a lot of talk of that. But apparently they pressed on. Now, look where we are now. We're just under... Well, let's put it another way. We're almost 5% above market. So, generally speaking, our values are 5% above market value. People don't necessarily like it, but the question is everyone taxed on the same basis? And that's what the next slide is about. This is a statistic we call the coefficient of dispersion, or COD, but it's a measure of equity in taxation. The standard is that if you go above 15, then you need a revaluation. So again, we've got a trigger point, 2008, that says the unevenness in the market is too great. Some houses are being taxed at too great a rate, at too great a value, others at too small a value. That's inequity. That's to us, that's the worst thing. We want the tax burden to be spread by value under the law, evenly. But look where we are now. See, that's an 8. Anything under 10 is considered good in the year of a revaluation. So in 2009, equity was excellent. In 2012, it's not in a bad position. So even though values are above market, our values are above market, everyone's being treated essentially the same. And so let's look at what could happen in the tax base using some predictions. These are countywide numbers, but we will drill down to Carrboro soon, and you'll see that the countywide numbers affect the Carrboro-Chapel Hill School District and affect Carrboro as well. There we go. Now, the taller these bars, the more the tax rate will have to go up to be revenue neutral. So it would look like in 2013 that every elected board in this county would have the privilege of raising the tax rate just to maintain services. and I presume that's not the most fun in the world.
When people start loving you.
I'm happy to take bullet, you know. That's what we do. You see, and here's, you know, here's the Chapel Hill-Carver School District. It matches what we're looking at in Orange County. You know, you guys are doing very well compared to everyone else. And so this is what we'd be looking at. The county rate would need to go up 6.6 cents to be at revenue neutral. School district rate would have to go up 1.4 cents just to maintain programs. And I would expect, if predictions are holding, if they hold out well, you'd have to raise your rate 3.1 cents or you would lose $590,000 out of your levy. I know that in the county, we really don't want to lose $9.9 million. That would start to hurt. So these are the numbers that we're looking at. And we thought it was important that the decision makers, such as yourselves, would get the earliest warning we could give you. So that's all I have to show tonight. I would be very pleased to answer any questions you have. If not, I'll get out of your way.
I think we're good. Thank you very much.
Actually, I do have a question.
Go ahead.
I was wondering what the trigger is. I mean, maybe it was the early or one of the earlier graphs, because it looked like it was falling between the lines.
Let's see.
Obviously, like in 2012, it drops. But
as long as you're between the gold lines, you're within the legal right to delay a revaluation if you were to choose to.
Right. So you're in the legal.
Yeah, we're not far from middle. Middle is right here at 100. You know, last year we were here. This year we're there.
So are you saying there's going to be a reevaluation or?
Well, right now we are operating under a resolution of the Board of Commissioners to have a revaluation in 2013.
And that was just determined previously, not triggered by any of this. Okay.
Yeah, that was done by resolution, and it's a resolution they can modify, and on the 15th, they're going to consider that possibility.
Okay. So you're letting us know that this is the data on which to possibly solicit or ask that the commissioners postpone that revaluation.
Or whatever your interpretation is.
Or however it is.
Yeah, ultimately, it's really up to decision makers like yourself what's the best thing. Mm-hmm. And I believe that our commissioners have, you know, invited comments that you might have about what you think they should be doing. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy decision. You know, if we catch values going down, then, you know, we're going to catch them in the middle of a fall. And people will say, well, you didn't wait long enough to get the lowest value that you should have. Mm-hmm. If you put it off, people will say, oh, we wanted a revaluation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's any decision they make is going to be subject to criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yes, ma'am.
These are numbers of sales.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't have anything to do, it does not reflect a decrease in the number of houses going on the market.
No, ma'am.
And it also, because people are just not putting their houses on the market. It also does not reflect people moving to the area.
Well, if people are moving to the area and buying homes, and they show up in our numbers.
So if people are moving to the area, they're not buying. I'm thinking of this in terms of, and I'll bring this up later, of another agenda item that we have with the coming up with the school's inadequate public facilities ordinance. And I'm thinking, gosh, there's something about these two that doesn't quite gel. But I'll bring that up there. But you don't do anything in the way of predicting population growth. That's not your bailiwick, right?
No, ma'am. I'm afraid I count things.
Okay. All righty. Reality-based. That's great.
Our evidence is empirical.
Good. I like reality.
All right.
When I can find it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. All right.
I have a couple questions. On the bar graph for a higher sales ratio usually leading to higher taxes post-reevaluation.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. That bottom line there, that's
So everything that's there is shown reflective of over 100%?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right, I just want to be sure I understood that. Then the next question I had, so does, when Orange County does the assessment, on the percentages, do they look at, or do they do a breakdown to look at what Carrboro and Chapel Hill, what their percentage of the sales is to the entire county? Are there?
We do it very locally. We do revaluations neighborhood by neighborhood.
Okay, so it's not looked at in terms of what the two municipalities. Okay.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, I mean, this chart right here shows you, even though Chapel Hill has this tall bar, this means that values in Chapel Hill are falling much faster than they're falling in Carrboro. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So that's a good thing for us, actually, comparatively.
But our tax rate is...
It depends on whether you're a buyer or seller.
Yeah, it depends on who you are. You know, when we send out tax notices with lower values on them, you know, we're expecting two different reactions. One, it's not low enough. And two, when the tax bill comes, if the tax amount does not go down, then they're going to be upset. And, you know, that's really the issue. If decision makers go for revenue neutral, then tax bills are going to go up for many people. Mm-hmm. You know, again, our greatest problem is we don't have enough data. Well, let me put it another way. We don't have as much data as we would like. Mm-hmm. Because the market is moving very slowly. We would normally have 1,800 to 2,000 sales a year, and we've got 969.
And how does it compare triangle-wide? Is there any view of that?
That's a good question, and I've been asked by the board to look at some of our neighboring counties. And it's interesting, in 2009, there were 21 counties that had revaluations. And of those 21, only four are having revaluations from 2013, and Orange is one of them. Mm-hmm. Three have put their revaluations off to 2015, and the majority, 11, have put them off to 2017. So other counties are, I think they're waiting for the market to calm down.
What does it mean, given that there's obviously quite a difference between the jurisdictions, if there was an increase in the rate, it's countywide, right?
Well, the countywide rate, you're right.
And so if we don't need to raise as much, but other jurisdictions do to remain revenue neutral, it's just going to be an average percentage raise throughout the county?
Of the countywide rate.
Countywide.
You know, percentage-wise,
because
if you look...
there's our rate.
Right.
So percentage-wise, Chapel Hill's
problem than it does ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bigger increase for them, 8.3%, than it is for you.
Right.
On town taxes, you're talking about.
On town taxes, right. Everyone pays the Orange mm-hmm. County rate, and we're looking at a countywide rate increase of 7.7%.
Right, so we do get the Orange County.
That's the Orange County effect that you were talking about, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Wait, I have one more question. I know I just lost it. Looking at other counties, just an overview, would you say that Orange County, in the larger scheme of things, is more or less or similar in terms of its dependency on real estate transactions, revenue?
We're unusually dependent upon property taxes for revenue in this county. We don't have a great deal of sales tax revenue, which counties that have, say, more retail do. So it's a much higher percentage of our revenues, and it certainly would be for not just the county and all the cities.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Before we go on to the greenhouse gas emissions report, does anybody know whether Lydia may be here later or not? And did she make a request about this OWASA item?
Yes, I think she'd rather, because she has some interest.
She wants to be in on the discussion.
Yeah.
I texted her a little bit ago to say, is she coming late or what? But I haven't heard anything from her.
Okay.
Well, could we pick an official date to which we're going to postpone that discussion then?
Which, number four?
Number four, yeah, because I'm sorry, I know some of our OWASA friends have come tonight, but I don't want to keep them any longer than we need to.
Well, that's a good idea.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and do it anyway.
Yeah.
So now I'm making you wait for greenhouse gas. You can't win.
Are you asking about what date we're going to
Yeah, the I think the manager's
go April 17th.
April 17th. Does that sound good? Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, is there a motion to move that item to April 17th? Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Item D2, a report on greenhouse gas emissions.
Randy Dodd will present the staff report.
So I'm just primarily going to provide an introduction here for another speaker. Tonight we want to give you a report on some work that's been done by Chris Lozinski, who's been a Delta Fellow. Delta stands for Developing Energy Leaders Through Action program at UNC, and Chris has been working with town staff for about 6 months now. This is a program that's comes from some state energy office stimulus money that provides a variety of entities across the state with interns and fellows. And so it's my privilege to introduce Chris tonight. I did want to mention that one of the reasons we wanted to have Chris come here tonight is that he's just wrapping up his internship. He's had some what staff feels like is some really wonderful accomplishments while he's been here, and we wanted him to have the chance to share these with you. This is his last week here, and these findings that he's had have just come together in the past few weeks. So as staff, we hadn't had a chance to really completely think about some of the follow-up steps that may be suggested based on the work that he's done. And I wanted to specifically read from the staff memo sort of a summary of this, that that the emphasis has been on refining the greenhouse gas emissions baseline report. This originally was done with an effort with the county and Chapel Hill and Hillsborough several years ago, and then last year you all got an update from a capstone team at UNC, and Chris has even drilled down farther. And I think the most exciting thing for staff is that the focusing of his efforts on the clarity of scope, the accessibility and transparency of the energy consumption and greenhouse gas emissions data, and repeatability of the methodology really provides the greatest chance that the town will be able to continue to accurately track its greenhouse gas emissions with the smallest possible staff impact. So it's been a great boon having Chris work with us, and attached is the resolution that basically asks you to accept the report tonight, and staff will intend to report back at a future date as we have a chance to more completely digest all of the work that Chris has done. So it's my pleasure and privilege to introduce Chris Lozinski to provide the report.
Before you sit down, Randy, I know that Chris has done a great job. I also know that he could not have done such a great job without you, and that, like, being a mentor really means a lot to an emerging professional, and I know you've been a really wonderful mentor, so thank you for doing that.
I appreciate that, and I also feel obliged to say there's been a number of staff that have provided support to Chris. That's
Thanks, Randy.
Yeah, I have a full list of acknowledgments at the end because there have been quite a few staff that have helped me out and other friends in other places. So, good to see you all again. Last time I was here, we had a discussion about energy use and facilities. So the agenda says I have 10 minutes to get through all of this. So I'd like to keep the discussion questions to the end. I'll try and get through all this and then have a discussion about what it all means at the end here. So quick background. Randy alluded to a lot of this, that Carrboro has been a leader on these issues for some time now, joining ICLEI, a local government sustainability organization, and their Climate Cities for Climate Protection initiative in 2001. And as part of membership in that program, there are five milestones they recommend the town following to reduce their emissions and track them and implement policies, and they're listed on the right there. And the town has done parts of all five, essentially, through its previous work. And the two that Randy alluded to in terms of the baseline inventory are up there, the ICLEI report that came out in 2009 and then the Capstone report last year. And my efforts represent my attempt to give the town the ability to really track its progress on the smallest resolution level possible of just the per meter, per building, per car emissions. So you all know the next month what happened the previous month in terms of your emissions. So really, Randy had mentioned that the clarity of scope, the accessibility and transparency of the data, and the repeatability of the methodology were my focus. So in terms of scope, I focused on all Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions attributable to town facilities, and that's kind of greenhouse gas speak for saying all emissions that either come from combustion on-site, either through tailpipe or through natural gas combustion, or that can be attributed to electricity use, and that's called Scope 2 emissions, basically saying that an action here using electricity results in emissions there at the power plant. So essentially they broke down into the three categories listed there, electricity and facilities and lighting, the fuel use in the town fleet, and also the natural gas use in town buildings. This inventory excludes, notably, all emissions from those organizations listed there, OWASA, Orange County Solid Waste, Chapel Transit, and our traffic signals, as well as non-municipal activities, obviously, for reasons of that we don't have complete and direct control over all of those entities, and they should, you know, be responsible for tracking their emissions instead of us trying to do it for them. So a recommendation I do have is working with those entities to get a better sense of our total governmental footprint because they do provide services for the town. But I only did focus on just the previously stated scope for the town. And as context and as reported by the UNC Capstone team last year, our emissions in the town roughly, and by our emissions, I mean municipal operations emissions, account for about 2%, a little less than 2% of Carrboro's total emissions as a community. So while, you know, we'll talk about reduction strategies and all that, just giving a sense of context that it really isn't that much in the grand scheme of things, but it's still very important to understand and really delve into what's going on there. So the data I collected were from all the service providers we have, hard data, also town records, and set up digital access websites or web access for town staff to look at so they don't have to call the service provider and get records, made it as easy as possible to allow for repeat inventories in coming years. And all data that you're going to see is in metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent, which is a pretty standard figure. And the data I collected allowed me to compile a footprint from January 2007 to this past, well, you know, this month, but I left it up to even calendar years. So December 2011 are the years included in this study. So the grand total graph, it's not very impressive looking, but it does tell a story. These are our total, this line represents our total emissions from all sectors across all years in the blue line there. The trend line I've laid on top of it in black is listed, the equation is listed on the right there, and shows that the slope of that line shows that our emissions have been increasing as a town by about 32 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. So, you know, to dig a little deeper, where are those emissions coming from? Here I broke them down by sector, as in general sector, electricity in blue, vehicle fuel in red, and natural gas in green. And you can see the percent contribution. Electricity is about 56%, vehicle fuel 38%, natural gas 6%. And if you look closely at the tops of the bars, they all kind of generally do increase slightly, so there is no one sector that is more responsible for that increase, so to speak. To break this down even further, though, I broke it into facility and sector usage in this pie graph here. And this is the first figure I kind of want to stop at and look at. The individual sources of our calendar year 2011 emissions. And you can see that streetlights actually are the largest single contributor in terms of their kilowatt hours used, converts into more carbon emitted than anything else, followed by police fuel, public works fuel, and then Century Center and Fire Station number one being our largest facility emitters. So I'm sure we'll discuss this graph at the end of the presentation, but I just wanted to put this up there to let you see that for now. So a big question, though, as to why our emissions were going up, the town added a facility in August 2010. We added the new fire station. Uh-huh. So I wanted to ask, you know, what portion of that is attributable to that fire station? And so the line in red shows, without fire station number two, counter four, the growth in every other aspect of the town. So, not including fire department fuel, though, that is a very small contribution. If you look back in terms of the increase with fire station number two, there should be a little bit in there that I didn't take out there. But apart from that, the natural gas and electricity use of fire station number two is taken out. So across all of the facilities, that second trend line is over there, and it says that all of their facilities have increased 18 by an average of 18 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. So there is actually an increase going on, and it's not just because we added more facilities. So now that we know where all of those emissions are coming from, we need to figure out where they're going to and where they have come from and what we can do about it. So this is sort of the central figure of the report. If we look back at this real quick, these two trend lines, the one with the fire station 2 included and excluded, I took as an upper bound and a lower bound for growth into the future, because I don't know at what rate we've been adding facilities in the past. So it's definitely not a linear trend, but it's the best approximation I can have given the constraints of data and time. So I extended those two trend lines both backward and forward. The purple line, it's hard to tell, but that's the top one on the right there. It's the steeper sloped one. That one does include fire station number two, assuming that we do grow at that rate. Blue does not, assuming that we grow at a slower rate. So those are the two projections, forward and backward, business as usual into the future, and also potential levels in the back here. Given the town's resolution in 2009 to control its carbon emissions to a level that would make our contribution to atmospheric carbon, I don't know how to phrase it as quickly as I can, but the 350 parts per million resolution, saying that we won't contribute more than that. Global atmospheric carbon, annual average atmospheric carbon, exceeded 350 in 1988. So I projected our fast growth trend back to 1988 to give us a baseline. I chose the fast growth just to give us a lower baseline, a lower target to shoot for, because that's what we frankly should be shooting for, is the lowest possible baseline. So that's the black line there, is the 1988 level of carbon. And the green line in the center is our little blip of actual. And the time series here goes from 1987 to 2035, just to be clear. So in the middle there, that's our actual little blip. And then going forward from it are three possible reduction strategies. And after looking around the state a little bit, the most successful, it has seemed, program for greenhouse gas reduction is now taking place in Asheville. And they passed in 2007 a 2% per year of 2007 levels policy, saying that, okay, you know, we know what our emissions are, and this is 2% of them, and we're going to reduce by this amount every year, 2%. And they were very successful in doing that. They were achieving reductions of over 3%. So they doubled their policy to 4% recently, and they have not been able to achieve that target quite yet. But they have been achieving, 8.4, I don't want to misquote, 8-something percent in the last 3 years. So a little over 3% per year, or 2%, yeah, a little under. So to model that, I chose the yellow line, the top line. That is a 2% reduction plan, which would get us back to our 1988 levels by 2033. A red line there in the middle, which is a 4% reduction plan, which would get us back to 1988 levels by 2023. And then in Sammy's email that he circulated in response to my memo, he mentioned that 40% below 1990 levels was the target that was sort of intended by the resolution. So I added another line to the graph showing that trend, 40% below 1990 levels by 2020. And that equates to between a 7 and 8% reduction annually. So those are those three trend lines there, and that's what it what it kind of looks like going forward. Of course, just saying these things won't make them happen. There are costs and planning and things like that involved. So in an effort to understand where we can start to wrap our heads around these reductions, what does 2% per year mean for us? Well, roughly half of fire station number 2's energy usage, if you want to think about it like that. If we can eliminate that much from the town's emissions every year, that's about 2%. Also, you know, we're talking about installing the solar photovoltaic system on the farmer's market that has an installed capacity of about 5 kilowatts, produce about 7,000 kilowatt hours annually at that system. So if we wanted to offset enough electricity use to get that 2% footprint, we would need to install between 45 and 50 kilowatts of solar annually and use all the electricity in town facilities. That size system would cover about a tenth of an acre. So the town has also looked at energy efficiency. That's in terms of just putting on solar. It's not a very cost-effective solution to this. There's plenty of efficiency measures we can undertake first before we do that. And the town has looked at previously getting consultants in to see where our buildings can be improved. And so there are two studies that I was provided by the planning department with to look at. One was our grant applications for the Energy Efficiency Conservation Block Grant, EECBG. And we went around and looked at facilities and proposed projects, asked for grant money. Based on the projects proposed there, a 2% reduction in facilities would cost about $46,000 per year in terms of just capital improvements. The payback on that, though, is pretty good. It was 8 to 9 years, considering everything that they were suggesting. So there definitely is a payback, but there is also an upfront capital cost there. The other study that was performed was by Waste Reduction Partners, who illustrated the number of no and low-cost solutions that are available in the town, and there's quite a few. They basically suggested that really tampering with and adjusting the Century Center thermostat could save the town $5,000 a year.
Jesus.
So, they're saying that it's the main auditorium is cooled and heated to 70 degrees year-round. I don't know if that's still true, but
it's not
true. There we go. Rebuttal. Yeah, so maybe that's been fixed now, because that study is about 2 years old. So I'm not going to challenge that any further. George has the final say. So regardless of that specific opportunity, though, I'm sure there are a number that still remain and are worth further study and investigation. So basically, I'd like to kind of open it up to discussion right after this slide of just saying that emissions are increasing. They won't go down without action. And I was able to put the town in a position to take good action by setting up these reporting protocols, and there are plenty of opportunities for savings out there. And I also, of course, would like to thank all of those folks for their help. So, thank you all.
Thank you.
Yes.
I have two questions. Sure. One is, I did want to know what the Century Center, what it's set at now, since George is saying it's not at 70.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, and then I have a follow-up to that.
There is a software system that we use to monitor and adjust, so not every room is set at the same setting.
Okay.
And so that is something we monitor and adjust, and Chris was correct. At one time, the hall was set, but now we adjust up and down based on requests from the folks at the Century Center and so forth. So we have been monitoring that and looking to save costs. So that's something we implemented more usage of. It's a rather sophisticated system that we implemented the greater use of, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago.
And is it up or down based on use, too? Because sometimes the auditorium isn't being used and it's being heated or cooled with no one in there, or is it just based on what people need in their office or their...
No, the office areas, you know, there are zones and so forth.
So they do that, but they adjust that then?
Well, no, there's presets, so we don't have folks
adjusting
to
up.
Just slightly. There's limits to what they can do and so forth, much like in here. There's presets, and then there are limits that folks can take it up or down. And there are times, areas in an old building like this and portions of the Century Center that get cool and people need the ability to adjust them slightly.
You've had that here.
So,
yeah, I guess I'm wondering, I'm curious, given that it's 15% of the emissions come from the Century Center, which seems huge to me, what else we can do. And if it's not, if the auditorium isn't being used and it's being heated and cooled, I'd love to know how much that's happening, because that seems like a natural place, probably among other things that we can do there. I don't know what's been done.
Yeah, I would just caution, much like any large facility, though, that if you take it too down too far in between, and then you have to
take more
turn on the unit.
It's going to imbalance the system.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a balance here with what you have to do with the system. So we have been trying to do that.
Okay. Well, my other question related to this entry center, or what other, and maybe because Randy mentioned staff hasn't looked at the report, what other recommendations have been made or implemented for that, given that it's 15%, which is a huge amount, it seems like?
Back when Randy had, we had made a grant application for making some modifications, and it was looking for putting light sensors, automatic sensors, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Town Hall, we're pretty good about turning off lights, and we don't have as many folks from the outside coming in rooms and leaving lights on and so forth. So there's one aspect. Sentry Center already has the T8 fixtures, the lower energy usage. Town Hall does not, but we're in the process. As a unit burns out, we will change the ballast or to do that. But to go ahead and, as an example, redo all of Town Hall has quite an initial expense. And I'll just couple that with, we struggle already to paint the walls, fix the toilets, and all those other things are things we balance in our facilities maintenance budget. So I think Chris made that point earlier. There's, you know, those initial costs sometimes are not within our means, even though in the long range there's a payback, but you got to have the initial capital to do those things.
Okay. Chris, I mean, this might be for Chris. That's your name?
Yeah.
Or you, George. Mm-hmm. It's about what you mentioned, Asheville, and I read it in the report. What can you just name a few things that I know they're a different city, but a few things that they have done, given that they've met the 2% goal and they have now the 4% goal? And
so a lot of it had to do with their streetlights and the agreement that they struck with Progress, because they work with Progress up there. I guess I should be a little closer to the mic. They basically negotiated a different rate with their streetlights, and we were able to replace them. So they're now sequentially replacing them all with LEDs. So that was a huge energy savings for them. They've also been doing things with their waste collection and waste services, and they included that in their greenhouse gas inventory. So it is partially a matter of scope. So our scope is very specific to buildings, fleet, you know, natural gas, you know, just basically buildings and fleet, you know, it, by the way I've defined it. So the opportunities there are a little bit narrower than the ones that Asheville had.
Okay. Thank you.
Could I also add that we are doing other things as well and have been for several years. Programmable thermostats were put in most of the buildings, not the Sentry Center, that already had a sophisticated system. But here, several years ago, we put in instant hot water units to help for people not running the hot water as long. Again, we have a program for changing out bulbs, and that's part of our five-year plan that we hope to continue to do. We've gone as far as pull the bulbs out of the vending machine so the lights aren't on. So although I noticed the one downstairs here when I was checking out the cookies still has its lights on, but the ones at Public Works are not. From an equipment standpoint, we have 4 hybrid vehicles now. We have downsized most of our pickups for the crew leaders, not the crew leaders, but the supervisors, getting better fuel mileage.
Yes,
that's one of them. We practice fuel conservation. We track our fuel. In fact, the fuel in 10-11 usage overall was down from the fiscal year before that. Mm-hmm. So it's gone roughly from the last few years, and it has gone up, but it was roughly 79,000 gallons, that's diesel and fuel together, in 7-8. To 10-11 was 81,000. It had been 82,000. So I think that's roughly 3 or 4%. But it's we had some increases in service calls. I know in fire, there's a lot of detail of where that is and so forth. But we track that pretty closely.
Two questions. The Sentry Center, of course, that's including the police department and the recs and parks.
Everything that is metered into that.
So
building.
It's one site. Okay.
Yep.
And on the fire station number 2, Is that that percentage, does that have to do with the vehicles only, or is it the whole footprint and the vehicles?
So the difference here on that graph is only from the natural gas and electricity use in the fire station. So, okay. Which is like fire station number 2, 3% of town footprint.
Right. But it's 3% more than we had had prior to that point.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So there still was growth in the other facilities, as evidenced by the red line, but part of that growth was just because we added a new facility.
And I guess the only other question I had was, because I was wondering about the relationship with, I guess, is it Duke Energy on the contracts and how much leeway we might have in terms of working with the contracts? We're dealing with a different utility, so.
For streetlights?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so streetlights are basically one of Duke's, a big money maker for them, and we haven't really explored the options for that. I just hear that there might be some pushback against them from them, but that's nothing official. We haven't fully explored that. Mm-hmm. So, but that, I would suggest that would be a good place to start, for sure.
So thank you so much. This is a really valuable study for us and the staff for collaborating on this. It's really important. I was curious, I have a few questions. One is I was curious to know what the method or setup is that will allow for us to track our energy use more efficiently. Is that per department or how's that set
It's
up?
Just all town electricity accounts through Duke you can access through one web portal. Piedmont, who, you know, I know who to email. They said they'll email us quarterly reports on our electricity use. PSNC, our natural gas provider, all through one web portal. Okay. So it's for town staff to just, you know, we have a login for the town staff, and they can just go and see past bills, see, you know, current usage, change in bills. They have good web infrastructure on that. So it's very, very quick feedback in that respect.
So it sounds like maybe that's per department, but I was thinking that just like we do with our money, we have a budget and we keep track of that kind of thing, and given the kind of targets that we were identifying here and the specific one we've already identified, which is 40% below 1990 by 2020, I would hope that staff could track this quarterly, I guess, is what you're recommending. That's certainly something I hope we can do so that we can get an accurate picture of what we're actually achieving.
It could actually go as quickly as monthly because, you know, what I did, Public Works does their fuel reports quarterly, but I just divided the quarterly figures by 3 because electricity and natural gas were monthly. So that was the easiest and allowed me to see, you know, because, hey, we're having a warm winter. Last couple of months, our emissions have been down.
Right. You know, so monthly quickly. Would allow us to assess the effect of climate change on our energy use, too.
Yeah.
The other, I noticed a recommendation is that supporting documentation and analysis used in this report be maintained in accessible staff file servers for sharing across departments. So that's essentially what that would speak to, is there anything else?
Basically, I have a bunch of Excel spreadsheets. Duke actually provided me electricity use for every facility back to 2003. Mm-hmm. So the only reason I picked 2007 was that was the first year that I had data for all sectors. So, I made Excel spreadsheets for every account, every bill, every kilowatt hour, every, you know, anytime. And you can see what they're all using. Yeah. If you want to venture through it, it's great. You know,
no.
50 columns, 1,000 rows, you know, all that good stuff. But it's all there. You know, so if somebody is interested in town staff or...
Well, but that sounds great. I mean, so basically I foresee us having kind of the same way we have a budget every year. We have a budget with our energy use and relative to our real goal of 40% reduction in 1990 levels. And there are creative ways we could achieve that. Each department could do its whatever percentage per year, and it could be a contest. I don't know if that makes sense. You know, one idea of many that there may be for staff to discuss on how best to reach these goals. I just want to make sure that we have that conversation and that we really start working to achieve what we have to do. The other thing was, I know there's the countywide green climate advisory group, and I'm on it, and we've never met, and I would really like to have that committee meet. And partly, I would like that committee to meet so that we can talk about these other entities that that work with us, like OWASA and Chapel Transit and Solid Waste, and fold them into a similar assessment of what we're currently doing and what we might do in the future. After all, we do have a proportion of emissions through those entities. As for the street lighting, the LED street lighting, I think that's a great opportunity for us to perhaps go in coalition with other jurisdictions. I know Durham's interested and engaged with the Utility Commission to make sure that the utilities are doing what is sane. So the Asheville example is really a great opportunity and model in the state where the municipalities purchase the capital cost, the LED lighting, and the return on that investment has been as quick as 5 years. And what they've done in Asheville is they pretended like they're paying the old lighting for 15 years, and the savings get put into capital improvement project for green improvement. So when you're talking about how there's, you know, the money for painting walls and all these other things that are competing for money, is competing for these energy improvements, this would be a fund that could be dedicated and finance these really low-hanging fruits that have much quicker returns on investments.
And the thing about their fund, too, is it incentivizes projects that weren't green before to be green. And so through that fund, their police department, you know, requested a couple new cars, and they got Chevy Volts because of, you know, the incentive through using that separate pool of capital.
Right.
So there's a lot of
pluses.
Yeah, pluses to that, reinforcing ones. So now that would reduce their emissions, and that's the second most, the police fuel. So things like that.
And I want staff to look into, you know, I've seen the Chapel Hill Police Department uses bicycles, and, you know, we're like higher ranked bicycle-wise than Chapel Hill. So it makes a lot of sense for us to really be pushing for alternative forms than what we currently have. I believe our Chapel Hill department, our Carborough department doesn't have any electric or hybrid vehicles. I mean, we should also look into that. And so there's a big opportunity there, you know, 17%. And, of course, encourage public works as much as possible to reduce that. I see on campus all the electric vehicles that maintenance use throughout the campus, there's an opportunity for us to be using those kinds of electric vehicles here too. And I forwarded to the board and to David, there's a company out of Durham that's creating bicycle electric assisted vehicles and there's a wait list by the county, the Durham County, and the public works of Durham. So we should get on that too. It was interesting to note that they're doing it in part to show and ramp up their image as a green city. So we've got that. We just can't lose that image. And so we've got to catch up to the game. So those are some of the comments I have. And I do want to stress in finishing, could we go back to the target graphs? The importance of, well, for one, in as much as we can, I guess the degree to which these lines on the bottom are dropping is in part determined by how much we actually have been rising. So I encourage us to look into and really try to get a better sense of that as much as possible. I know that when the Century Center came online, it also bumped us up. So those big significant milestones could help us better inform kind of where that line might lie. All that to say that we really do need to stick to our goal, as expressed in the resolution, which is represented by that orange line. And it's a pretty radical ask, especially comparing other places in the state that are striving to do that. And I want us to maintain that line. It's better for us to fail but keep an accurate sense of where we should be heading than to set a standard that we might achieve but is not doing as sufficient compared to what we must do. So that's those are comments.
Jackie, and then me, and then Randy.
Thank you. I know that several state and certainly the federal government and even some departments on campus are beginning to look at flex time and telecommuting as a way of reducing both the in-house energy usage and the emissions that people use getting to and from work. I know that that is a shift in the paradigm here, and I also know that not every position would easily fit into that, but sometimes it is more doable than one would think. There are several people in my office who are now working, you know, 4 long days, and that has all kinds of benefits. Some people in my position will someday soon, I don't want to, but some people will be able to work several days from home using our iPads. I think really we do have more positions in Town Hall where people would be able to telecommute than we may at first think, because when you have all of the technology and when, you know, including the ability to speak to each other through Skype and to watch each other, that maybe if we sat and thought about it and got employees' input, we would be able to come up with some ways that people could telecommute at least part-time or have flex time. And I think the benefits both in our own energy usage and in overall would certainly be worth looking at.
Could I mention that I think it was right after the high fuel costs of 2008 when they spiked, we did precisely what you suggested. Across departments, we formed a committee and addressed not only items at work, but for those who are commuting and paying the high price of gas. And there are some folks that are still now working 4-day weeks versus 5-day weeks from before.
Do you think we could, like, relook at that again and maybe give it, I'm really glad we did it. Maybe we could bump that up again or remind people of it?
Well, it's certainly worth taking, as well as revisiting idling policies, all those
right,
types of things.
Right.
That, you know, as prices go down, people become less concerned and,
right,
and so forth. So certainly, I'm sure that's something that, you know, could be looked at again as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, well, something I'd like to know just briefly is that even if you do reduce those emissions, they still wouldn't show up here because technically those emissions are scope 3 to the town.
I'm not so. Really. I mean, I was concerned.
She's not on that, though.
Right. Yeah, so if
I mean, I'm certainly concerned about the ones to the town, and the
right.
ones to the town would show because there would be fewer bodies for fewer hours
right.
in our facilities, but also kind of concerned about the other 98.
Right.
That are,
yeah, so yeah. It's definitely a good strategy to pursue. I just wanted to be clear that
yeah.
it wouldn't
I know.
Show up there.
I know.
Yeah.
Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Go ahead.
George, this pie graph. Any projection what would happen with that 16% when we have to start trucking trash to Durham?
Well, it's going up. I can tell you that. I don't know what the percentage is. I mean, the calculation of the additional fuel was made when we presented the impact.
So there's no projection on in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, what that would look like?
No, that's certainly the point was raised when this town started talking about
right.
having to go to Durham.
Yeah, because I know that Asheville, and I'm really glad Sammy and Michelle brought Asheville back up. Asheville back in 1990 started to change how it dealt with waste as one of the, pillars of change in terms of, just affecting recycling and carbon emissions, et cetera. And I think I know that the board, Carver, we've supported, Mark's proposal about a waste station. I think one of the things that we really need to get people behind who are really concerned about greenhouse gas emissions is what will happen when we have to start trucking waste not only to Durham but
from there to Virginia or
exactly,
wherever.
Exactly. Because you just look at any of the models, what we do with waste, the further away we have to go to make sure that it's dealt with, the more cost and the the greater negative impact it has on greenhouse gases. So, I think we've been consistent, but I look at this pie graph and we can do all these little things, but if we continue to make the decision, and when I say we, I mean the county continues to make the decision that the waste is going to be trucked and we're going to, enter into a non-sustainable solution, this is not going to change. Right. It's going to get worse.
I just wanted to raise one point. It's probably something for a later agenda, this later agenda item that we have today for our retreat. Speaking to what Randy was pointing to and also the other agenda, the school's facilities agenda, I really want to encourage us to consider an advisory committee that could really be addressing all these limits that we have to face. It's also a conversation with Owasa that we are constantly having. So the greenhouse gas emissions, the energy we use, these are all representing an opportunity for so many smart people of our community to engage in this conversation through an advisory board. So I want us to have that conversation and consider it as a possibility during the retreat.
Okay. I think, so is there a, there, is there a, resol- isn't there a resolution?
Did you move the resolution? Move attachment A.
Okay. So could I ask, can you go back to the chart Sammy was talking about that shows the, So I think the additional thing of follow-up at some point in the future that would be helpful to me, and I'm not trying to put a date on this one, but would really, I think it would be helpful to me to have some reaction to staff about what kind of resources, what kind of practical steps would we have to take to move in the direction that our currently adopted goal would tend to suggest. And I think the other thing that I raised this last time, and we had this discussion and got attacked on the blogs for it, but my other question is, given that, so the energy consumed by our town government is something like 2%, did you say, of the energy consumed in the community. I just think we have to keep thinking about the reality that, so $50,000 spent inside of town hall may, or at Public Works or wherever, may achieve a certain level of energy savings for the town and for the taxpayers, and that's great if it has a return on investment that makes sense, then let's go ahead and do it. But there may be also the opportunity to spend $50,000 on providing services to our community that provide for an equal or greater amount of reduction. So I would just like to kind of think about. I think the question of how much carbon dioxide our town government and its operations are creating is important. But apparently it's 49 times more important what the rest of our community is doing. So let's just bear that in mind.
Good point. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great work.
Excellent work.
Appreciate Chris.
So I'd like to move this and look forward to a report back from staff once staff has an opportunity to really digest this report.
Okay. Great.
Then,
it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. That brings us to a review of 2012 draft annual report of the SAPFO from the Technical Advisory Committee. Relatively briefly, we're hoping.
Is it here?
Marty?
Yes.
You're making the presentation?
Yes.
That was a surprise presentation.
Good evening.
All right. I'm delighted.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Trish is unavailable tonight, so I'm standing in her place. And, yes, I will try to make it brief, cover the points from the PowerPoint. And attempt to answer any questions. Otherwise, we do have a week of time here. We wanted to get the information to you tonight, and if you have questions that I cannot answer, Trish will be back next week, and we can provide answers as needed.
Okay.
So just, again, I'll try to be brief, but I'll run through just how we arrived at this. In July 2003, a memorandum of understanding was signed between Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and the county that officially enacted what is known as SAPFO. And the signatories, again, were Carrboro, Chapel Hill, Orange County, and the school system. Signatories agreed to work cooperatively to develop a realistic CIP for construction of the schools in a timely manner. At the town level, we enacted or adopted land use ordinance regulations that are tied that tie development to the availability of caps through the school system, again, with the idea to keep everything in line and on schedule with regard to school construction. There were a few exemptions made as a part of the memorandum of understanding, things such as senior housing, things of that nature, and projects approved prior to July 03 were not included. There's an appeal process, but there's never been a need to use it to date. So what we're here to discuss tonight, just to kind of run through what we go through on an annual basis. On a November 15th of each year, the school system provides the numbers. Within 15 days, the county commissioners certify the numbers, and from there, the county staff compiles an annual report laying out all the details related to where we are with things. The review, the report is reviewed by a technical advisory committee made up of planning directors and other staff. And then the draft is submitted to the signatories. That's where we are as of tonight. You have an opportunity, if you wish, to provide comments back to the staff and ultimately to the commissioners regarding the matter. This is scheduled to be the final report, that is, the final version is scheduled to be certified by the county commissioners on May 15th of this year. Just a summary, recommendations. No changes to the levels of service are recommended, so they would remain at 105, 107, and 110% respectively. That's elementary, middle, and high school levels. No change to the membership date. The capital investment plan is not subject to staff review. Continue with the use of the 5-model average for the student projections and the student growth rate, and a use of a 2009 generation rate. I should mention here that there is a call in the full report, and the full report is available on the county website if any of you wish to read it in full. There was a call for the need to study further multifamily housing particularly. The numbers are showing that multifamily housing is generating more students than expected. So there was a market bump up in that number, and so we're calling for further study of the matter. The bottom line with regard to where we are with respect to the absolute percentages of 105, 107, 110%, that means in relation to the number of caps available, that an elementary school needs to come online in 2012-2013, a middle school in 2017-18, and then a high school in 2020 and 2021. The elementary school actually is needed a little more soon, well, a year sooner than was shown last year. The middle school also came down 1 year, and the high school entered onto the radar, whereas it wasn't even on the radar last year, or on the horizon, as it were. For tonight, you're just asked to review the information and specify comments as if desired for transmittal back to the county by April 17th. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, and if I'm unable to do so, we'll forward them to Trish for next week.
Jackie?
I remember when this was passed back in 03, and I had some issues with it then. Has it ever... I sometimes wonder where the county gets their projections from. We just had a presentation from another branch of the county which showed, for all intents and purposes, very slow or no growth, and is projecting that over the next, I think, almost 5 years. And yet these reports are saying, the schools are saying, that they're projecting growth in the next 10 years that will justify the need for these new schools. And I am not opposed to schools. However, schools are the most expensive thing in the county budget, and they are the single biggest thing in our taxpayers' budget. And I just, I have never been totally comfortable with how these numbers are massaged and gotten to. I guess that's more of a comment than a question. Maybe the question is, in my experience, I've never seen, I remember back when this was being developed, which was long before 03, that the idea was that if there weren't enough chits, or whatever we call them, to justify development, the development then didn't move forward. I've never seen that happen. How has this been used, other than to justify the school system's project? And again, I don't hate schools. I'm not hating on schools. I'm loving on taxpayers. How about that? I don't get it. And we've had two very different sets of numbers tonight when it comes to population growth, and they just don't gel, because they're being presented by two very different entities with two very different purposes. I really don't expect you to be able to answer.
Well, I can provide a little feedback at least.
Yeah.
There are multiple models out there that
can pick and choose.
Yes, and yeah. And the plan as it has been done since 2003 actually utilizes five different models and takes an average of the five. So there is some logic to it, one would hope, but I understand your point that it doesn't always come out.
It makes absolutely no sense if you look at the growth that is not happening in our community for them to say that we're going to have these needs, and particularly when you then look at the budget numbers that we were just given at the beginning of our meeting. And how, please let me finish, and how these numbers drive those budget numbers. These are, there's something, something isn't
seems
in
not
sync.
Right. All right. Yes.
I don't know if this, and Jackie's exactly right. And you may not know this, Marty, but in 2005, 2006, were the projections based on Carolina North coming, you know, being developed?
Because, yeah, I'm not sure of that.
Because, you know, I seem to remember that they were, and they were planning schools based on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's yet to happen, yet that's exactly where the next two school, or at least one of the elementaries, is planning to go, or I think. One of the schools is
at
planning
at some point.
To, yeah. And so I think that's getting to Jackie's point, you know, that would be a huge development that would take, make a huge impact. You know, what's the reality of it, and do we keep looking to expand based on the projections for that particular footprint? Because I think that footprint, more than any other, will affect our both areas, the Chapel Hill and Carborough.
I'm sure we can determine that, yeah, but I'm not certain whether it's included.
Yeah, you guys can.
Because if the numbers 6 years ago were hinged on that, Jackie's exactly right. It's like, you know, way offline.
Sammy, and then I have a question.
So it sounds like the schools see these numbers and then decide to build a school as opposed to the other way around. It almost makes like it seems like we need a threshold that precedes the threshold the schools use to determine when schools are going to be built, so that we are triggered to think about our development before the schools do, and that way the schools would be responding to our action as opposed to us never responding to their perpetual action.
Well, one thing, if I may jump in and just make a suggestion, I think one of the things you have to do as a developer in a development approval process is to at some point show town staff that you've received your caps, and that gets reported somewhere deep buried in the memo somewhere to the Board of Aldermen when one of those items comes to us. Might be interesting to, in the future, just feature that information a little more prominently. And I don't know whether this is, I don't want to create work, but I'm saying if this is relatively simple to do, it might be helpful when you tell us that, to tell us sort of how much more room that leaves after that development is approved. Do you follow what I'm saying? Because in other words, they're going to the school system and saying, we're going to build 50 apartments, so we need 50 caps or whatever, just to know where that's sort of leaving us with the level of crowding. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do, except that the sequence is that you get your permit first and then you get the caps.
Right.
Now, I see.
Now, the extent to which prudent developers
look at that
inquire as to whether or not there's caps available, but the caps have always been available, so I don't think it has been there hasn't been any time when they have refused to issue caps because they've exceeded the thresholds.
Exactly.
But permit first, and then the permit doesn't, by the ordinance, permit doesn't become effective until you get the caps. In other words, they can't do anything with the permit until they get the caps.
Okay, well, so maybe, you know, I guess I don't know what the right mechanism is or where to interject it into into the process, but I'm just suggesting that somehow kind of closing the information loop to point out to the board when we consider a rezoning or development application or whatever, so we have that information with us for us to look at. That would be helpful.
Yeah, I want to explore this further with Trish and the manager, but
I don't want to make it complicated. I mean, I'm just suggesting, like, if that's reasonably easy to provide.
It sounds similar to a fiscal impact statement.
Something like that.
Okay. You receive sometimes.
Something like that.
School impact statement.
Something like that, maybe just so that it's on our radar more, that we get to kind of the issue that some of the issues Sammy's talking about, at least.
Yeah, so it's a challenge of figuring out what the mechanism is, mm-hmm. and so I don't really understand exactly how the caps are determined. I guess it's once the school's there, there's a set amount of caps.
There's a three-hour PowerPoint presentation with any details you would ever, that Mark and I saw five times, I think, before.
We
could arrange for you to see it.
Or maybe we could just simplify it where like it seems like it's when the schools are there that the caps are there.
It doesn't work if it's simplified.
You're right. Or maybe the caps simply need to be reduced such that it doesn't represent 107%.
You can't go there, Sam.
But rather,
you
can't go there.
5%.
Yeah, the problem is that there's no Once you kind of reduce those targets, what you said, you suddenly move into sort of instant building moratorium category,
right.
For the at the elementary school level in particular right now.
Right, but so what is the purpose of this?
And you also
policy?
Don't have the right. And we also must educate every child in our community.
Right, every child that's here.
Yeah, I don't have any kind of great answer for you. I'm just saying. I'm just suggesting that we need to kind of close the information loop, so we're taking that more into account.
At some point, we really need to assess the purpose of this and see if it's achieving it. And if it's not, it seems like it's a lot of wasted
effort.
And
well, there's another side to this, though, that none of us see because we're not involved in the financing of construction of schools, which is that the county staff. Financial staff takes all this stuff into account in planning for their county capital improvements plan and so forth. I mean, I don't know how it'd be interesting to hear how useful it is to them. But anyway, I'm just saying there are some other plans besides just ours that get developed off of this. So.
My understanding, if I may, is that we have a much higher degree of coordination between the various planning staffs and those who are doing the planning there's sort of now an institutionalized and regularized procedure for ensuring that they are aware of developments coming online to help their planning. So it does have that benefit.
Beneficial that way.
Right.
I think, just one other comment, I think the information that the mayor requested would be useful in rezoning considerations where you can make a determination as to what whether you wish to increase the level of density on a particular piece of property for lots of different reasons, one of which could be school capacity. But once the property is zoned and just a CUP, there's no basis for saying we would deny a permit on the basis of crowded schools. I mean, that if the schools were overcrowded, that would happen automatically by this ordinance when they seek the caps and don't get it. So
And so we can't move the goalposts on people that way on a development application. But it is exactly relevant. You're right. Yeah, to rezone.
Could we make a policy as a town without having to alter the caps themselves and say, you know, X amount of caps for the town of Carrboro, even though they may be available overall, represents a cap on development for us?
No, you have.
No.
You've got an agreement that's tied in with Chapel Hill, you know, Orange County, and Carrboro. It all has to function together.
Right, but we wouldn't be altering that agreement. We would just be allowing for our permitting to happen independent of what that agreement says, but informed by that agreement.
Nope.
Well, like I said, you've got two tracks. You've got for the conditional use permit tracks, you've got property that's zoned in this particular way, and you really can't take into account the impact. I mean, it's not part of our ordinance to take into account whether there's school capacity or not. Mm-hmm. You could take that into account. You make zoning map decisions in terms of setting the density. But once you've set the density and you set the ground rules, you can't then say, well, this is zoned R10, but we're going to turn your development down because the schools are overcrowded. You've got an agreement in place that deals with that. But you could say if they come and ask you to increase it from an R10 to an R7.5 zoning density, you could take into account and the information about school capacity and the impact of your rezoning decision. So it's the legislative, the rezoning stage when you develop that responsiveness to, you know, its impact on the schools. You set the playing field, so to speak, for your zoning.
So our zoning is defined through our ordinances, reflecting the triggers as set by this policy specifically. Now.
Yes.
And so if we were to be reflective with a different standard, without needing to change this agreement with the other jurisdictions, it would be a matter of changing our ordinance.
You have two ways to change it. You either change the zoning of the ordinance, or as you said earlier, or suggested earlier, you change with the consent of the other signatories to the agreement. You change the percentage threshold.
So we can change it through our ordinance.
No, you can't
unilaterally change the percentage thresholds, but you could.
You could just downzone properties.
Right. You could downzone properties. You could, in other words, where property is zoned, you know, for example, R10, you could change it to R20s thereby basically cutting the density in half.
What I'm not understanding is if a property is zoned R20, in theory there's a trigger at which we don't allow any further development on those properties, even though it says it's R20, it's contingent on whether there's school capacity.
Right. But that's all spelled out in this ordinance, and that's really what he's saying is we can't really say to a developer, notwithstanding that we already have an ordinance that defines the limits here, that actually we're going to apply. We're going to say that the limit is actually something lower than that. I mean, if we wanted to lower what the limits are, we should talk to Chapel Hill and Orange County about that.
That's exactly right.
About making a change to stuff.
It's a three-way agreement, four-way agreement.
Mm-hmm. Let me jump in with my comment, which is on a slightly different point, which is I think at some point as the planning staff gets into looking at this question of multifamily housing and student generation rates in multifamily housing, that it's really important to it will be really important to draw a distinction between the student generation rates in aging multifamily housing in Carrboro versus new development. And I'm not placing any sort of value judgments on any of this, but just to say that when I hear from the school system that
there's a surprising number of kids who come from two-bedroom apartments in apartment complexes that they're probably, I mean, I just know they're not talking about Shelton Station. Mm-hmm. You know, they're talking about Carolina Apartments, or they're mm-hmm. talking about Abbey Court. Mm-hmm. And so whatever the system, I don't want to know the nitty-gritty of it. I just want whatever the system is to take that into account, that that brand-new apartments are not the same thing as 30 or 40-year-old apartments.
And the difference between who lives in apartments in Chapel Hill and who lives in apartments in Carville.
Well, or just for example, I mean, I don't know what Chapel – I didn't even hear what Chapel Hill did with it, but there was a proposal for a big, very clearly student-oriented apartment complex up on Homestead Road.
Right.
And, you know, regardless of whether I think that's right or wrong, it's just worth noting that – yeah, they want to build 150 new apartments, and they're all going to be three-bath apartments. But the public school's student generation rate is going to be zero. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, somehow those subtleties need to work mm-hmm. into the system.
There's a resolution provided if you wish to adopt it, accepting the information and offering an opportunity to make comments. That sounds like
attachment A.
Something that you might want to make as a comment.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it could just be feedback for the staff. But
I
mean, there's room for us to add.
Well, I'm not sure I can distill it down into a sentence. So
yeah,
feedback.
We just leave it as feedback for the staff. And so, is there a motion for that resolution by the way, receiving the report? Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed. Matter passes unanimously.
Thanks, Martin.
Yep.
Thank you, Martin.
All right.
You're welcome.
Didn't mean to shoot the messenger.
That brings us to item D5, the discussion of options for possible 2012. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Board of Aldermen planning retreat.
Okay. This item was discussed by several members of the board, and we thought we needed to get it on an agenda and, you know, have you all talk about whether you want to have a retreat, where you want it, if you want a facilitator, just some of the details. We'd just like a little bit of direction formally to move forward or not.
Did you have a suggestion the other day by email that I saw?
Did I?
Yeah. I don't know. I want a retreat is the answer to the question. And we all emailed about that, too. I think, well, anyway, yeah. I want a retreat. Mm-hmm. And I know there have been facilitators in the past. And Andy Sachs has facilitated, and he's wonderful. So if folks like Andy,
Andy has been most recent, so he could really help transition with Michelle being new to the board and David.
And, you know, he also has a master's in city and regional planning.
Yeah.
And he's amazing.
Yeah.
And it would be
so nice.
Put that in a minute.
And it's supporting a local nonprofit. I think with David being new and with Michelle being new.
Yeah. It's a really
and we haven't met in a while. And
yeah, we haven't done it at all.
Even if it's just like a
half day.
A half day checking in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what kind of location do you all want to have?
Nice. Well, do we? When we went to the
Seymour
Center,
like Franklin Hotel, nice or like?
No. The Hamptons not gonna be ready on time.
River Street Lawn.
When we were at the Seymour Center, that seemed a little tight.
Yeah.
And Wassa's a great fallback. Do we need to, what are the needs? We don't need to have necessarily access for television, correct? So then we have...
It's presumably not going to be televised now.
So what are our, are there any constraints?
Well, if we're not on TV, you can wear whatever you want.
And we usually do during the summer, right? Well, I'm not uncomfortable with Owasa.
Did you suggest
going to
Stonehenge?
I did. Did I do that on email?
Yeah,
awesome. I was
going to
say that.
Let's do that. What is that?
It's not in Carrboro, though.
Yeah, I know.
What is this?
It's the Stone House in Mebane. It's wonderful.
It's in Mebane?
Well, it's like it's in Orange County, though.
We can carpool.
That's a big carpool.
It's wonderful, though.
You can bite there.
Look into whether it's cost-effective to use
this? Well, I might be able to get it.
In Mebane?
Okay. Yeah, I think it's more
Michelle
like
can help
it's really more like Eflin. But anyway.
No, it's in Mebane.
Well, that may be their mailing address, but they're It's in Orange County.
It's okay. In Orange County.
Okay.
20 minutes away. I can talk to you about it.
Okay.
Let's look at that. I don't want to spend a lot of money to go there, but if we can.
If we were going to do lunch and whatnot, I mean, we'd want to spend it here and bring it there. You know what I mean?
Well,
it's little things like that.
We can work that out.
Let David look into a little bit.
The date you mentioned, maybe after the budget adoption, which is scheduled final for June 19th. So you want to have it after that date, and that's a Tuesday, of course.
It's usually on a weekend. Right?
Oh, it's on a weekend.
Yeah.
You want to do a weekend?
Like during the day.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a daytime.
Like Sunday afternoon.
Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah, it's usually like Sunday. Okay. And no basketball or
no
football then. June's just baseball and not many of us.
What day is that?
Oh, are we picking a date?
After
again.
June the 19th is a Tuesday. The next Sunday would be June the 24th.
What? How many meetings are we having after Tuesday, June 19th?
One. Only one. Because then you're off for the
right.
July.
Right.
And the first
so,
two
like
weeks
the 24th? That Sunday, the 24th of June.
But then, and then we would meet again on the 26th, 2 days later?
Oh.
Yeah. I'm just asking. We could.
Yeah.
I mean,
but then,
y'all.
See, the next weekend is like July. The next...
Not that much, you know.
The next weekend is what, the 27th? No. No, the 30th. It'd be the 30th.
30th
right?
is a Saturday.
30th
so it'd
of
be
June.
July 1st. That's getting a little close to people taking
it's
long
July 4th weekend.
People are doing a long weekend
right.
for the 4th then.
No, I mean, we're not necessarily going to be looking at before we go on vacation items. So
we could meet in July.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do the 24th. I just realized that.
I hate July.
Is July 1st? I mean, I'd rather do it closer to when we're meeting rather than having that.
What if we did in August?
I think meeting in June is a good idea, particularly right after the budget, because we will have just been through an ordeal together. We can take an assessment of what the first half of the year was like. David will have been through his first budget cycle and will have had time to get his feet on the ground, as will Michelle.
Okay.
So, as a senior member of the board, I'd like to suggest that.
So the 24th.
So,
I can't do the 24th.
Okay. We'll work that out.
You were the one that wanted the 24th.
We'll work that out. We'll work that out.
Okay.
So I think that sounds fine.
Jackie.
In past years, we've appointed like a couple of like two board members to kind of work with the staff.
Are you appointing me? We're going to do it.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yes.
I'm totally retreat.
With Andy.
Okay.
Yeah.
You, me, and Andy.
All about
it. All right.
Excellent.
So the self-appointed social workers will take care of it.
I think that's excellent.
All right. Is there consensus about the two of them? We're going to spearhead this effort. All right, that's great.
First we'll check in with our feelings.
Wait a minute. I better get on this committee. Break up this
party. No, you better not.
All right. Is there anything else that the staff wants to raise?
Staff first. Whatever order.
Staff. I don't know. Yeah. Do you have anything?
Just a couple of things. One is that we're working on the 12-13 budget. Probably be ready to meet with you probably in about two more weeks. I think that it's looking really good. And I didn't say anything before, but I wanted to, and I know that, you know, the environmental energy, you know, lowering our greenhouse gas emissions, environmental sustainability, preservation are important to you. And so I do want to, that's one of the things that I'd really like to work with staff with and try to do some things so we can really start to see some significant decreases. And I think, like, having a retreat would bring some of those things out. I've read it. I've seen it. But I'd be real excited to start moving that forward.
That sounds great, David. And as you go into the budget, you know, no reason to not try to reflect some of those goals in the budget. Specifically, for example, with our fleet. You know, if there's ways of purchasing electric vehicles or whatever it may be,
we don't need a study to tell us that those are going to save us energy, so we could move forward with that.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope everybody had a great Earth Hour night, Saturday night. Hope you all remembered. It was pretty fun.
I went to bed at like 8:15.
Well, then you did the right thing.
Really conserved. Did you have another
question? That was it.
That was it. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
Dispute Settlement Center fundraiser tomorrow starting at 5:30 at back room at the top of the hill. I encourage everybody that can to go. They need it.
They do.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. All those opposed.
So this is tomorrow at 5:30. This is the dispute settlement center's main.